We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio, the 5-star app, and Muse, the brain sensing headband that helps you meditate. I'm Patricia Karpus. The Muse headband and app can help you start a meditation practice or deepen your practice. And the Muse S was specifically designed to give you lots of meditations, visualizations, and features to help you sleep better. All great stuff. Check it out at choosemuse.com. Today, we have an episode with my co-host, Ariel Garten.
Hello, and welcome to another Untangle. As we begin to open up, as the world opens up, as people leave their homes and go and connect with one another, the power of human connection takes on a whole new meaning. Today, we're going to examine an interesting take on human connection and how we influence one another with my friend and awesome guest, John Levy. John is a behavioral scientist best known for his work on influence and human connection. He's been able to connect and foster meaningful relationships with people of all domains, celebrities, royalty, Nobel laureates, and then bring the links in this network together in meaningful ways. John is here to share his insights on human connection with us and show us how to connect with anyone. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
It's my joy and pleasure to have you here. So let's dive in by understanding a little bit about why human connection is so important. We all know it's important intuitively, but can you put some words around it for us?
Oh, for sure. So I'll just start off by saying I grew up pretty lonely. I was a super geeky kid, and I didn't really quite fit in. This was like before you could actually have cool geeks. Now everybody likes Marvel superheroes. Back then it was me and like three other kids in my school. So the weird thing is I thought that that was like a unique experience because I would see shows on television where like everybody was hanging out and everybody had friends, even the geeks. And as I was researching my new book, You're Invited, I came across something pretty startling. In 1985, the average American had just about three close friends besides family. By 2004, less than a generation later, we were down to just about two. So in 19 years, we lost a third of our close social ties besides our family. And that is terrifying. That's terrifying for two reasons. One is that we like to blame things like social media and technology. The real culprit is probably people moving more for work or after school, and it resets their social ties. But now that trend has probably progressed, and with the pandemic and people being locked in their homes and avoiding physical contact, that number's probably even lower. And for me, the most concerning thing about that is that research from Brigham Young looked at what are the actual greatest predictors of human longevity, especially the ones that are in our control. And after genetics, which we can't really control for, in a really meaningful way, at least not yet. Number two is close social ties, so having close friends or family. And number one is social integration, which is essentially measured by the number of social contacts you have throughout the day. But it's that sense of belonging, that you're part of a community, that you're integrated into the way that people interact. And if you really look at the research, loneliness is on par with almost smoking a pack a day of cigarettes. And so it's something I'm really concerned with. The physiological impacts are pretty profound. The psychological impacts are insane. So, yeah.
So we've just come from a circumstance where many of us have been in a forced loneliness, where we have been disengaged from the social fabric of the lives that we're used to crossing with, the woman at the grocery store, our good friends that we go to tea with, schools, etc. How do you suggest that we begin to weave back these pieces in our lives, possibly in the same way or possibly in ways that can allow us to deepen those connections further?
Great question. So I think the first thing we want to ask is, what is it to actually connect? What is it to have deep relationships, the kind that people talk about having a best friend or a confidant that they can share anything with, or that person that if they're really stuck, no matter what, always comes through? And the first thing I had to accept is that just about everything that we do in American culture, and probably in other cultures, but I don't want to make generalizations since I'm not that familiar, is either backwards or wrong.
To not generalize at all. Yes.
No, but like, it's really kind of crazy. So let's start off with the beginning of a relationship, when you connect. And the best, worst example is in the business world. That you go to an event or a conference and people say, okay, you need to get out there and network. And it turns out that networking literally makes us feel dirty. Research from Harvard Business School found that the implicit association is that we need to wash because we feel so dirty. I don't know if you enjoy networking, but I personally don't.
I enjoy the meeting of people and the creation of network, but I absolutely don't enjoy the feeling like of usury or the potential that I might be meeting somebody to use them for the next purpose. That makes me feel yucky.
Yeah, because it's completely not human. If we really look at those relationships that we value, we tended to have either met them through a friend or through a shared interest, activity, or culture. So a shared interest would be if both of us enjoy meditation, we might have started chatting on some Facebook group about it or something, and that translated. An activity could be our kids were in the same class and we participated in like a bake sale or something like that. Or a cultural experience would be, oh, we celebrated a religious holiday together. But you'll notice that all of those have something in common, which is that there's a shared background and an investment of effort. That we actually connected because we could find common ground. And by investing effort into that common ground, we actually cared more about each other. And that brings me to the second thing that we have backwards. So the first is that in American culture, people try to connect rather than create friendships. Or they try to network rather than create friendships, and networking feels awful. The second is that we also tend to try to buy relationships. Oh, like I'll take you out to an expensive dinner, impress you. But it turns out that the opposite works far better. And it's called the IKEA effect. And the IKEA effect states that we disproportionately care about our IKEA furniture because it is so miserable assembling it and buying it. In fact, anything we put effort into, we care about more. And that's how human beings are. We survived as a species, not because we're the fastest or the strongest, because we aren't. We survived because we can work together. And it turns out that when we invest effort into one another, we care more about each other. It's why we care about our own children.
Many years in the making, tons of effort, countless hours of unthanked labor, yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you talk to parents, and if they find out their kids were switched at birth, they'd still have the ones they raised. It's not like suddenly it gets shut off because there's no genetic relationship. And that's what's amazing about it, is that human beings are wired to care about what they invest effort into. And in general, we have this view, and I'm not going to say everybody, but a lot of people have this view that, oh, I don't want to bother somebody, or I'm going to save my favors for another day. And it turns out that that's probably limiting or hindering our relationships. Because if I actually do you a favor, Ariel, it'll turn out that I will view you as somebody worthy of a favor and thereby care more about you. And as long as reciprocity exists, that's how relationships are formed.
So relationships are formed through the act of doing, investing, and caring. Now, in some ways, that seems naturally intuitive. How do we see that play out in our lives, and how can we actually allow ourselves to do more of that for the people in our lives that we either know or we don't yet know and want to know?
So I think there's a few things. First of all, is to understand the actual mechanism. And the mechanism is called a vulnerability loop. And the way it works is, let's say, Ariel, I'm in Toronto. We're walking down the street. And I say, oh my God, Ariel, I am so stressed out. This book launch has taken so much out of me. I just don't even want to show up in front of my computer anymore. In that moment, I have expressed vulnerability, my stress and my burnout. Now you have a few options. If you ignore me or make fun of me, then trust will be reduced. But if you acknowledge that vulnerability signal I put out and then put out your own, like, John, I know how you feel. When I was first designing Muse, I was clocking in so many hours. It was completely overwhelming.
That's what I'd answer. My natural inclination is like, oh my God, I know how you feel. I have been so burnt out on product launches before. It's so hard.
Yeah. And in that moment that you've demonstrated and signaled your vulnerability back, then we both can acknowledge that we're safe with each other at this higher level of vulnerability. And that's how trust is actually formed. Trust does not precede vulnerability. Vulnerability precedes trust. And so when we're looking at fostering relationships, it means a couple of things. One is that we really want to be on the lookout for when people signal vulnerability so that we can complete the loop and increase the trusted relationship. The second is that if we see that people aren't signaling vulnerability, then it might mean that we should. And I'm not saying you have to like verbally vomit your entire life story and all of the tragedies. You can start off with something small, like, I'm super stressed this week. What have you been doing to relax or unwind? I could really use something good. And in that moment, when somebody responds, then they're actually closing that loop and trust is increased between the two of you. Now, this could also be true at work. Asking somebody's advice is a great way to show that you acknowledge and respect them and respect their view. And they'll actually end up liking you more for asking them. So I think that this mechanic of the vulnerability loop is critical. And it's much, much, much easier when we participate in activities that have effort. So rather than meeting people for like cocktails, going on a hike together or doing a workout actually provides more of an opportunity to invest effort.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great. And this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, help.com/untangle. Now back to our show.
It's also a shared experience as opposed to an interview.
So these are all great takeaways for the creation of greater connection. So what I just heard is vulnerability. You said something so profound, which is that vulnerability precedes trust. So most of us presume you need trust prior to vulnerability and that trust makes it safe to be vulnerable. And what we're actually saying here is no, you should take the risk to be vulnerable. It can be a calculated risk. Listen to the response and that will let you know if there is trust, which will then enable further vulnerability. And that to be good friends and good listeners and good partners, we should be very carefully listening for our compatriots' vulnerability signals, times when they might be throwing out a white flag or throwing something over the edge that we didn't catch. And it's in the matching and mirroring, reciprocating of that vulnerability that we deepen those relationships.
Perfect. The other thing I'd add is that it might be a risk or feel like a risk to put ourselves out there and signal vulnerability. The key in all of this is to go from small to large. So there's this great study where people were stopped on the street and asked for complex directions, and almost nobody gave it. All right, unsurprising, you're walking through your day, somebody stops you on the street, you're in a rush, you won't. But in another group, people were asked first the time, and then once the time was given, they were asked the directions, and predominantly they gave them. And here's what's really interesting. You would expect that a total greater investment of effort would actually reduce the chances of getting the directions. I just gave you the time. Why are you asking me for something else? But in fact, once a small amount of effort was put in, your dean as somebody worthy of more effort. And so you don't need to start off with something huge like, oh my God, I'm thinking of getting a divorce, right? Like, slow down there, champ. Let's start off with the basics. Oh my God, I barely got any sleep last night. My child was crying or they just got an ear infection and I was up all night. And that's like an easy one to start with and then go from there as the relationship deepens. Also, time helps a lot when you have the privilege of it.
Yeah. So hearing this, there's a few things that come up in me. One is not wanting to sound complainy. I think we often have the desire to make the person who we're with feel good about being with us by not complaining, not kvetching, not wanting to be too heavy. I guess what you're suggesting is that there's a balance here.
I think that we can separate two things. There's a separation between something that is a complaint. And let's be honest, with our closest friends, there aren't many people I can complain to and just like vent. And sometimes venting is really helpful. Being heard is a pretty wonderful experience, especially when you're struggling and you're tired and you're worn out. So occasional venting is fine. I think it's very healthy. But there's also a difference between venting and trying to progress a conversation. So me saying, hey, Ariel, I don't have any children, but if I was going to get, I feel totally overwhelmed by the idea of having children. What are like three things that I should be doing to prepare? And in that moment, I've signaled a vulnerability loop, but it wasn't a complaint. It was me expressing that I'm scared or anxious about something, but it was also progressing the conversation forward.
Yeah, that was actually a beautiful conversation progression. Signal your concern, appeal to the other's insights with a very specific ask that's easy to action on potentially and can move forward. Very nicely done, behavioral scientist.
Thank you.
Thank you. The other thing that I heard from you is the value of investing effort into a relationship. And that's so interesting because we tend to think about doing something fun together as valuable, which it really is. Being in joy with one another is incredibly bonding. But also inviting your friend over to help you garden or to build something together or to paint that fence or take care of your kids together or whatever it is, it seems also has a value that's often overlooked and that we're typically very scared to ask for.
It's interesting. One of the reasons that we've maintained a friendship, just so that the listeners are aware, is that 12 years ago or so, I started a secret dining experience where 12 people are invited often to my home to cook me dinner, wash my dishes, clean my floors, and the weirdest thing is they thank me for it. And I know it sounds completely ridiculous, but when these people come over, they can't even talk about what they do or give their last name. They prepare this meal together, and when they sit down to eat, everybody guesses what everybody else does, and they find out, as Ariel, you mentioned earlier, they're Nobel laureates, Olympians, editors-in-chiefs, celebrities. And I've hosted over 2,000 people over the years, and people often wonder how it works so well. And the answer is that the reason people actually bond is because they're cooking together. It's not the eating of the meal that matters. The food is
terrible.
Mediocre, right? But yeah, it's like,
it was a really bad burrito.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for your honesty, Ariel.
Yes.
I'm very appreciative.
Being vulnerable here. But yeah, the experience was incredible.
We had a famous journalist come one time and she said, I was expecting a phenomenal meal in decent company. I got the exact opposite. And so when we really understand what forges relationships, it's going to be this shared effort. And when two people are cooking together or gardening together or painting an art project or knitting, whatever it is, then a few things happen. The first is that IKEA effect. We end up caring about each other more. But also, let's say you're more introverted and you don't really want to continue talking constantly. The activity itself carries the weight for the conversation. So if we're cooking together, there's sometimes when I'm asking for, pass me a knife, pass me, I don't know, a pan. And each time I do something like that, it opens and closes a vulnerability loop really quickly. Oh, can you do this? Can you do that? The second thing is that we'll have a conversation. And if we run out of things to say, then we just focus on the cooking. And so it takes the pressure off. It makes it less awkward to make friends with new people. And if you look from an anthropological perspective, we evolved in groups that hunted and gathered. And so the way that the community bonded was that it would work together. Now, we don't live in those types of communities anymore, which means that we just have to be a lot more intentional about the kinds of activities that we do to ensure that we can have that level of social integration where people feel connected to one another. A great example of this is I have a friend, Daniel, who runs a group called Urban Sherpas. And several times throughout the year, they will send an email to people saying, we're doing a walk. And they'll just pick a wild path. They'll say, we're walking around all of Manhattan, the island. Or we're walking across three bridges today. And it's several miles. And people come and they chat. And some people walk alone for a bit. And then they join a group and join the conversation. But it's like 50 people. And it's a really healthy activity. It's not just gorging on food. It's bonding with people while doing something novel and different.
It also brings up why the idea of volunteerism is so important, because you are integrated with a group of people doing something in service of another who you now care more for because you've invested into it. That's part of a larger community structure and organization.
Mm-hmm. I think volunteer work is great. I wish that part of American culture was to have a service year, a understanding that there's this expectation to give back to the community and to really see giving people an opportunity to explore options before investing into the incredibly expensive process of university. At least in the US, it's very expensive. So yeah, I love these ideas. I think that the more that we have an opportunity for shared activities, the better we are. And if we look, people often like to complain about social media, that it's making people insecure and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure all that's true. The closest we've been able to find it in the research is that if somebody's spending 6 hours on social media, they're not spending 6 hours doing something else, like participating in a soccer team or a debate team or some kind of AV club or something like that. And that's potentially what the real loss is. It's that the pro-social behavior that teaches us social skills and that gives us a sense of belonging begins to disappear.
What do you recommend for someone who is shy? There are lots of people for whom any of these suggestions sound slightly terrifying. The idea of signing up for a soccer team and showing up with a bunch of people you've never known with skills that you're not quite sure that you have just seems mortifying. How can we create a sense of safety for somebody who is not comfortable in this domain?
So I think that there's a few things. The first is to understand that there's a difference between shyness and introversion. So shyness is a fear of social judgment. I grew up a pretty shy kid, but I'm an extrovert by the traditional model. So what does that look like? It means that I would want to be around other people, but I'd be so scared of social judgment that I wouldn't actually do anything.
Oh, my heart is breaking. It's the worst of all worlds.
Don't worry, it works out. Spoiler alert.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
Okay, I'm waiting.
Introversion, and I'll be honest, I'm not 100% sold on the traditional definition of introversion, but I would say that introversion seems to have to do with the scale, meaning the number of people that you come in contact with, and for how long it's enjoyable. So for some people, it might be at the scale of, I really enjoy being around 5, but not 10 people, and my ideal length of time is like 2 hours, and then I'd be happy reading books for the rest of the day, or doing my work. So extroverts might say, oh, I'm happiest when there's like 100 people around me and it's a wild party, whatever it is. So the big thing about shyness is that it's a muscle that we have to develop so that we just feel more comfortable. And for this, I'd recommend what's called like a flywheel effect or the winner effect. It turns out that mammals, I'm not sure if it's all mammals, have this characteristic that when we experience a win, we flood with testosterone, which actually makes it more likely that we will win our next, let's say, fight or battle or challenge and be more confident. The problem is that if this loop continues too much, an animal in nature will be overly confident and then end up dying in a fight or being out in the open and being hunted. So the key here is that we want to experience a few wins so that it builds up our confidence. And so my view is, nobody says you need to go to an experience with 400 people at it or join a soccer club or something like that. You can start off with small little things like doing some volunteer work at your local religious institution and clock in a couple of hours and just meet one or two people and build up your confidence over time. Everybody wants to change overnight, but that's not realistic. It's also not healthy because the moment something goes wrong at a large scale, you don't want to participate anymore. So the key is to build up that muscle. And that means finding the right environment. So here's a few things you can do. One is meetup.com has tons and tons of meetups that are community-based activities. And you can find the things that are most appealing to you in terms of topic and in terms of style. The second is there's digital events that you can practice at, like a Creative Mornings that brings hundreds of people on, but you don't necessarily have to turn your camera on. So first, just come and participate, get to enjoy the programming, and then maybe if there are breakout rooms, you'll get to meet four or five people. And if it's around an activity, it'll probably feel a lot better than if it's just five people in a Zoom room interviewing one another. But the key is to start small and allow yourself time to progress. You don't want to just say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to hang out with 50 people and be completely overwhelmed.
I love those recommendations. Meetup.com is a great one. When I look at the question of shyness, I'm also going to look at it from a different direction, which is the thoughts that you have in your head that don't necessarily align with reality. So here's where the meditation hack comes in. We're used to going into an experience, feeling a sense of fear because we're shy, and then having it create a bunch of thoughts in our head like, oh no, this is going to be terrible, which then ramp up the feelings in your body. And it's often the thought that you have in your head at the beginning that makes it so bad for you. So let's just take an example. You've got a room full of people and you walk into that room thinking, oh no, people here are not going to like me. So how do you walk in? John, what would your posture be like if you walked in thinking people weren't going to like you?
I'd look defeated.
Yep. Would you go up to chat with people?
Probably not. If I could find somebody I'd know, I'd try to hide near them to feel safe. And other than that, no.
Yeah. Would people talk to you?
Maybe like the extreme networker who's just trying to find out if they could do business with me.
Yeah. So basically probably not, because you've got all these physiological signals that we as humans are good at reading saying, don't talk to me. I don't want to be here. You're like, okay, man, I'll just leave you alone. All good. And you'd walk out of the experience with what thought confirmed in your head?
That nobody likes me. Nobody wants to talk to me. And I'm a loser. But that's just me.
I don't... That's anybody who walks in with the same thought in their head. Let's switch the situation. Exact same situation. We're just going to switch the thought in your head. You walk into the same room of people with the thought in your head, these are all great people who are fun to talk to. How would you walk in?
Super excited to enter any conversation, because it'll be a blast.
Yeah. Who would you talk to?
Anyone and everyone.
Yeah. How would they talk to you?
Like, I'm a joyous, fun human being.
What information would you leave with? What thought in your head? What confirmation?
These people are amazing and I can't wait to come back.
Yeah. What was the absolute only difference in these two scenes?
The context that I entered in.
Yeah. The thought in your head. And then the physiological experience that that thought created for you. And then the more thoughts that were created based on the experience that you went in with. So this is where practices like meditation really come into play, where you're able to examine your own thoughts. Really ask yourself, is this true? Is this real? Is this the reality? Divorce the fly forward that we tend to have from thought, feeling. This is going to be awful. Oh no, I feel awful. Therefore, it is awful. Oh yes, it's awful. And then retrain how we go into it. So I love your idea of starting off slow. That's absolutely key. You know, baby steps to try it. but also look at your own piece of the puzzle here, because I'm somebody who tends to think that people are great, and so I have great experiences with people. But it seems to me that most people in the world that you come across on a daily basis are actually great people who just want to be nice to you and often are just super shy themselves. And so they're awkward and they don't know how to. And they're kind of scared too, but they really want to be good people.
There are two super fun studies that I think you'll get a kick out of. One was done by the Israeli Defense Forces. Not sure if you've come across this, but commanders were given new teams to train and were people had taken an aptitude test in order to enter these units. And commanders were told that these were like the top performers. And they then, unsurprisingly, the team became an elite unit that performed or outperformed any expectations. The interesting thing is that this was research being done on leadership training. And the participants that were put into the quote unquote elite group were selected at random. So there was no actual evidence whatsoever that any of these soldiers were special in any way, except for the commanders were told that they were elite. And as a byproduct, they trained them differently and they became elite. So expectations have huge impacts on people's, on the way that they appear and the way that they perform. The other one is, have you ever talked about the spotlight effect?
No, go for it.
This was a study done, I don't remember which university. Students were asked to come in for a leadership or like a research on team or group building or something like that. Except one student was asked to come in early. And this student, each time the experiment was run, was given a t-shirt to put on before they entered. And at the time when the study was done, the most embarrassing person in American culture was Barry Manilow. So they put on a Barry Manilow t-shirt and then entered the group and they interacted with everybody. And afterwards, the person was interviewed and said, oh, do you think anybody noticed your shirt? And they're like, yeah, I bet like at least half of the people noticed. And then they actually interviewed the people. And I think it was like a quarter of people noticed and nobody actually cared because everybody's too busy thinking about themselves. So they then repeated the experiment with a really cool t-shirt. And at the time, that was either Jerry Seinfeld or Biggie Smalls. And once again, people assumed that about half of the group actually noticed and only a quarter did, and nobody actually cares. And the experiment essentially shows that when we think that there's a spotlight on something, most people just don't notice it and just don't care. So when I was a teenager, I was worried that people would notice my pimple or something like that. The only person who cares is me. And so nobody is paying any attention to us when it comes to either of these things. So we might as well enjoy ourselves and not take things so seriously.
So on that note, we have a number of amazing techniques and mindsets for great connection. The ability to be vulnerable, to take the risk to do so, doing things together, recognizing that you probably are going to have a good time if you simply allow yourself to, that the thoughts that you have in your head about what's wrong with you, nobody else has in their head. And if we take the small risks bit by bit to go out and engage, we're going to get reward. And what do you say to those who are extroverts and to those who are not scared of this and to those who just can't wait to dive into life and connection as well? Again, how can they make their experience better and others' experiences better and even deeper in their connection?
So the first is to remember that not everybody is necessarily going to be as comfortable or excited to meet at scale. So go easy on people. I know that all I want to do is have like 4,000 of my closest friends hang out at a party. And that's not necessarily what other people want to do. The second is that people who tend to have a lot of friends tend to make more friends. People who are lonely and isolated have a tendency to become more lonely and isolated. So if you're the type of person who is constantly gathering and inviting people, think about who that friend is or friends who maybe aren't getting out as much, and invite them to come and join you. And also, whatever it is that you do, do something that will work at kind of any scale, meaning that a party is awesome and that's great and people I'm sure are excited to drink, but it's also nice to invite people to go take a walk or to take a paint class or something like that. Because if we don't get people who are lonely out of their house and remembering how lovely it is to be around other human beings, My concern is that they'll just get lonelier.
Oh, thank you so much for that sage and poignant reminder. And on that note, you actually have an amazing book actually called You're Invited, YOU'RE, You're Invited. And it is available now on all your favorite booksellers. John, do you have a website associated with the book?
YOU'REINVITED.info. And you can find it on all my socials. So John, J-O-N, Levy, L-E-V-Y, T like Thomas, L like Lion, B like Boy. John Levy, TLB, across all the social platforms. And I'm not sure if you know this yet, Ariel. We found out that it debuted as number 2 on the Wall Street Journal.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm super, super proud of it. And it's been an incredible experience putting it together.
It's amazing. I've been watching this book be put together through your experiences that you've been creating and curating. And it's fantastic. It's You're Invited, The Art and Science of Cultivating Influence. So thank you very much, John, for being here with us today and sharing your insight about how to gain greater connection. And thank you for all the good work that you do in the world.
This has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That was the wonderful John Levy. His new book, You're Invited, is available on all your favorite booksellers. You can find his website, www.youreinvited.info, or johnlevy.com, johnlevytlb.com. Proud that his book made it to the Wall Street Journal #2 bestseller. Hopefully these tools and techniques that you've learned today will be helpful to you in creating more connection in your life. And if you want additional resources, you've always got Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you meditate and sleep in order to give you more insight into the workings of your own mind and teach you the tools and techniques of mindfulness to help calm your reactivity, to help observe your thoughts, and be able to choose better actions as you go into the world. Muse, the brain-sensing headband, can be found at choosemuse.com, and it gives you real-time feedback on your brain during meditation to help you start or enhance the practice, and has been used in over 200 research studies, demonstrating its ability to either kickstart or hyperdrive your meditation practice to bring numerous benefits to your life. You can check it out at choosemuse.com, and you can use the discount code MUSESTRESSLESS. Wishing all of you a wonderful week, hopefully filled with connection.